Okay, we're starting here in the middle of Lamed Daled Amud Bet, the beginning of the second perek of Masechet Midot. Over here, the Mishnah is beginning to describe to us the Har HaBayit, the structure of Har HaBayit. And from there, it's going to move into the Azara, then to the Mizbeach. We're going to get all the particulars of the layout of the structure. Here it begins with Har HaBayit, Haya, Hei Meot Ama, Al Hei Amot Ema, 500 Amot. Of 500 amot, which means that it was a square platform. Rubo min adorom, the majority of the space was on the southern side. Sheni lo min hamizrach, second to that was the eastern side. We're speaking about the amount of open space on Har HaBayit. Shlishi min hatzafon, the third one is the north. Miuto min hamarav, and the least amount of space is on the western side. Makom shea rov midato, shamaya rov tashmisho. The place where the majority of the space was, we had the majority of the utility of the areas. First of all, you have to know that Har HaMoriah is exactly that. It is a mountain. And therefore, if you're going to build a structure on the top of the mountain, you need a flat area in order to build. You can't build on a mountain that has a peak at the top because it won't support the structure. So somehow you have to deal with the fact that there is a mountain and you're trying to create a flattish structure, or even a structure that is climbing through the bedrock levels, you still need to create some sort of platform upon which the building is either built or the building itself has a floor that is associated with it. We know from the walls that have been excavated that the building that we see today, the Kotel HaMaravi, which is not the only wall that's there, all four walls are there, the Kotel HaMaravi, the Dromi, the Mizrahi, and then on some parts of the Tzfoni where it's needed, the walls are retaining walls of the mountain. Because in order to make it a flat platform, Herod built those retaining walls, and that's what you're looking at. When you look at the Kotel HaMaravi, you're looking at a retaining wall of the mountain. That retaining wall was then filled with landfill in order to flatten out the platform. And then they put rocks, or they laid stone floors for the whole Har HaBayit on top of that landfill. Again, that also explains why there were mechilot, that there were tunnels underneath. It was very easy to have tunnels because you're going into landfill and you can dig tunnels into the landfill and then structurally put stone around them in order to make them useful to go through without having to dig into bedrock in order to get these tunnels. So that explains why there was a large underground system of tunnels by the Mikdash, under the Mikdash, around Har HaBayit. Now, if you look at the skew of where it lays, you can see that today because based on the Dome of the Rock. Where the Dome of the Rock sits, let's assume that that is the area of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. You can see that on the platform of Har HaBayit, the area of the Mikdash was skewed heavily northward and heavily westward. And that's why the Kotel HaMaravi is so important, is because it's the closest place that we get to vis-a-vis the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Since the Mikdash was skewed towards the western side of the platform, that means that the Kodesh HaKodeshim, which is on the western side of the Mikdash, is closest to the western wall. It is further north than where the Kotel HaMaravi is today. That is, if you go through either the tunnels, or if you do it to go to the Kotel HaKatan, if you go from the outside, over there you can get to the spot that is actually Mol Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim, exactly opposite the Kodesh HaKodeshim. But then you have here now a structure, and I sent out the picture so you can see this, that gives you the grade of the mountain. And you can see that the mountain, when you're facing from the western side, which you can see today is the modern Kotel HaMaravi, the bedrock climbs from the southern side all the way to where it peaks on the northern side. And that is that the majority of where you need to put the landfill is towards the southern side because that's where the bedrock is lowest. The mountain climbs as you move towards the north. I've discussed this in the past. That's why Yerushalayim in general, when it was always attacked from the northern side, because that is the weakest defense. The other three sides have natural valleys that surround it, make it much harder to attack Yerushalayim. But the northern side here climbs and is much flatter on the bedrock after that. If you go through the tunnel tours, you can actually see this as well. As you walk through the tunnel and get towards Via Dolorosa, where's the end of the tunnel tours on the northern side, you will start to see bedrock under the stones and the Herodian stones built on top of the bedrock. As well as you can see there, they have Chashmonaim stones also from the structures that were there from the time of the Chashmonaim as well. If you look at it from the eastern side, you can see the similar shaping of the mountain, that forces you in certain locations to build structurally to have walls that retain the mountain. And here you can see a picture of that. These are the retaining walls and identified for you where the Kotel HaMaravi is, the modern Kotel HaMaravi. But you can see here there are these retaining walls. They're much deeper on the southern and southwestern side because that's where you have the deepest points on the bedrock. And then they filled it up and then made that platform where they would have the Beit HaMikdash. And the Beit HaMikdash sits skewed on that platform towards the northern side and western side. And that's what the Mishnah here is telling us, that majority of the Har HaBayit is on the southern side. And now based on the way that you read the Mishnah, the Pashtut, is that since the southern side was open, that area had Rosh Tashmisho. That's where all the quote-unquote storefronts were set up. All the things you needed for the Beit HaMikdash, that you needed to purchase, things that you needed in terms of money changing, all of that is found on the southern side. There's a portico that runs around that southern side, and in there you have people who are working, whether it's commercially oriented or it's run by the Mikdash itself, there are people there that are servicing those that come up to the Mikdash and taking care of the matters of the Mikdash that are there. The storehouses, everything that's needed for the Mikdash is found on that southern side because that's where the majority of the open space is before you get to the Mikdash. It also becomes more important as the city of Yerushalayim shifts from being south of the Beit HaMikdash and Har HaMoriah, because Ir David is south of there, to the western side, which is the quote-unquote new city, or what is known as the Jewish quarter today. That area becomes the expanded part of the city, and then there are gates or entranceways from the western side as well, but majority of them enter on the southern side of the mountain, the southern skew of Har HaBayit, because that's the open area where you can enter in. So that becomes the important area. It's also found in the New Testament when it speaks about the turning over of the money changers' tables. That's a reference to that area on the southern side of the Mikdash where you have individuals who are servicing or working for the people who are coming up to the Mikdash who need to change money, need to give the machatzit the shekel. All of that is being described here by the skew of the Mikdash on the platform. And again, if you take a look, if you go to any of the areas where you can see on the Har HaBayit today, you go to the top of Eish HaTorah where you can look down on Har HaBayit, you'll see that the Dome HaRak is skewed very heavily to the north and then closer to the western side. And that's exactly what's been described here. That's where the Mikdash is, which leaves the areas open. The Rosh Mishatz, who has a Perish Mishnayot, and over here it's included in the Gemara, he has an interesting view, which we already noted in the first parak, which is that he thinks that the gateways that are described in the first parak were not gateways to Har HaBayit, but rather gateways to Ezrat HaNashim. And therefore, he thinks that this description here in the Mishnah is not necessarily a reference to Har HaBayit, but rather a reference to the Azara and to the Mikdash itself, which is very hard to reconcile. But that's his view as to what's happening here in this Mishnah, rather than it being the description of Rov Tashmisho being Har HaBayit itself. He's speaking about the Mikdash itself, the Azarot, that's where the majority of the utility in the Mikdash was on the Rov Midato, where the majority of the space was, that's where the majority of the utility was. The Rosh himself says about this, V'libi migam gen belashon, says I'm really skeptical of the explanation that he's giving. All right, now we move on to Mishnah Bet. Kol nichnasim lahar habayit nichnasim derech yamin. Anyone who enters onto Har HaBayit goes to the right side, umekifin, and they go around, v'yotzim derech smol, and then they exit to the left. Chutz, with the exception of me, shiro davar, except somebody who had something that was inauspicious that happened to them, shu makif lismol, that he goes against the traffic and goes around to the left side. And when that happens, the people say to him, malacha makif lismol, the fact that you're going against traffic, people will ask him, why are you going against traffic? Which means that something bad has happened. Shani Avel. The person then says, because I'm Avel. And then the people who are querying him as to what's wrong say to him, Ashochein, Babayit Hazeh, Yenachamecha. The one whose Shekhinah is present in this temple should give you comfort or consolation. So that's Nichum Avelim. Shani Minudeh. Or the answer is that I've been put into excommunication. And then the response of the individuals who queried as to what's wrong with them say, Ashochein b'bayit hazeh, the one whose Shekhinah resides here, itain bilibam, will put into the hearts of those that put you into cherem vikarvucha, and they should bring you back. They should reconcile with you. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's what Rabbi Meir says the response was. Amale Rabbi Yossi asitam ki'ilu avru alav et adin. It sounds like, from what you're saying, that the comforting of the person who's excommunicated is that they wronged him, the people excommunicated him, and therefore Hashem should reconcile their hearts to rescind the excommunication. So that doesn't sound right, because then you are basically maligning those that put him into excommunication. Ella, the response should be, Hashochein b'bayit azeh, the one who resides in this bayit, itein b'libcha, should put into your heart, v'tishma l'divrei chaverecha v'karvucha, that you listen to, or you accede to the requests, or whatever the matter is with regards to your friends, meaning the majority or the Beit Din, and then they will rescind the excommunication. So that puts the burden on the individual himself, that Hashem should reconcile his heart with his fellow Jews, rather than have it be that the Beit Din should be reconciled with him, because that makes it sound like the Beit Din wronged him in some way. Now, as far as walking around, again here, similar to the Mizbeach, when you enter into the Har HaBayit, from one of the gates of Har HaBayit, then you turn to the right. So that would be easy. You'd start to move in a counterclockwise manner. Again, when you continue to go to the right, that is when you're facing inward. When you're standing on the edges of Har HaBayit, if you're facing inward, then you continue to your right, which means that you're always going around in a counterclockwise manner. And then that way, anybody who's going in a clockwise fashion, which is going to his left, that's an indication already that something is wrong, something is amiss. And the Melechet Shlomo points out that there's also symbolic meaning to that, which is that when you go to the right, that's a siman of rachamim. When you go to the left, that's a siman of din. And therefore, people that have bad things befall them always turn to the left as an indication of the din of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being taken out on them. And therefore, it also adds in Masechet Smachot that they did this for people who had a chuleh in their house, or they had lost an aveda. It was a way to engage the public at large, either to beseech Hashem for rachamim on these individuals, or to help them recover that which they had lost. And then again, when it says here that when you are exiting, you said derech small, does not mean that you necessarily go left the same way that you went right, because then you'd be going against traffic on your way out. Left is when you're exiting the Azara and facing out towards the Har HaBayit. If you make a left turn then, it'd be the equivalent of making a right turn when you enter into Har HaBayit. Or in essence, what ends up happening is if you enter at any one of the gates, you continue to your right until you hit the entrance to the Azara, you go into the Azara. Then when you exit, you continue along and exit from the gate that you came in, but you continue counterclockwise around. And that way everybody's always moving the same motion. Someone who is going against that motion, meaning they're going to the left when you face in from Har HaBayit, or when you're facing out, you're going to the right, then that person will be going against the traffic, and that'll be an indication that something's amiss, and they should ask him, and they should inquire as to why he's doing that, and that's the response that we have here. Lifnim mimenu, inside of the walls of Har HaBayit, is the soreg. Now, the soreg, according to many, is a wooden lattice work, and you can see that in the Rosh. That's how he describes it over here. He actually uses the word lattice, but it was done on a wooden lattice work that's done on angles, similar to the fencing that we have today, right? That is a crisscross fencing of lattice work. So that was the soreg. Gvoa yud tfachim. It is 10 tfachim high. And shloshesred pirzot hayubo. And there were 13 breaches in it, Shepartzum Malchei Yavan, that the kings of Yavan, or when the Greeks attacked during the time of the Chashmonaim, in order to quell the rebellion, they broke in the walls of the Soreg 13 breaches, Chazru V'Gadrum. And then the Chashmonaim, when they came back and restored the Beit HaMikdash, they fixed those parts of the fencing. And they instituted at that time that they would bow down 13 times. Each time you passed one of these breaches, you would bow down to thank Hashem for the miracle of restoring the Mikdash to the hands of the Jews and eliminating the Greeks or Greco-Syrians that had taken over the Mikdash for a period of time and defiled it. So there you bow down at each one of those breaches. Now the Mefarshim over here explained that the breaches were done because the Soreg, according to many of the Rishonim, was there to limit the access of non-Jews to the area. Until the Soreg, non-Jews were allowed to approach. From the Soreg inward was only areas where Jews could enter. So the Malchei Yavan, to demonstrate their rejection of that view and their rejection of the temple of the Jews, they broke breaches in the gather, the fencing of the Soreg, in order to show that there was no limitation on non-Jews, and that they could go wherever they pleased and enter into the Mikdash. That's why when they fixed them later, they made Yud Gimel HaShtach HaVayot, because it restored things to their former state, and it put the Jews back in control of the Mikdash, where they eliminated all the idol worship that went on in the Mikdash, and they restored it to worshiping Hashem. Lifnim Imenu, from there inward is Achel, is the area of the Chel, which, according to many, is a flat area. It's a space and not actually a wall. Eser Amot, it would seemingly be describing the footprint of the Chel and not the height of the Chel. But if you go back to the Perush Mishnayot of the Rambam, Perush Rambam says that the Chel is Hichuma, Shusovev Kol Azara. It's a wall that goes around the Azara. If that is the case, then that would be giving you the height of the wall, not the footprint of the Chel. And the Rosh brings from his Rebbe, he says, Pamamar Rebbe, Hachel Eser Amot. He says that the Chel is Eser Amot, Gova. That's the height of Kotlo, of the wall. Musava Gova Kotel Asureg. And it's going back on the height of the Soreg's height, which is hard to say because the Soreg says that it's Yud Vachim. But it seems to be speaking about height. According to that, it would be another wall rather than a footprint of the area. As to what is the expanse of the Soreg or the Chel, if you take a look at the pictures that the Rambam has in his Perush Mishnayot, it's picture Bet in the Mishnayot, for Rambam, he has the Soreg in some ways surrounding almost the entirety of the Harabait, and the Chel being a small space before the Ezrat Nashim, which again is questionable about what he's doing. He's drawing in two dimensions rather than three dimensions. So is he showing you a wall flat, or is he showing the area or the expanse of the Soreg, which is difficult? The Rosh also has a comment here about the Soreg. He says, Velo Perush Kamaya ben Michitzot Harabait uben Asoreg. It's not clear here how much space existed between the walls of Harabait and the Soreg itself. Umistaber, and he says, since it doesn't explain it seems to make sense. Shayolech apnei kol mizrach. It went along the whole eastern side, mitzafon ledarom, from north to south. So along the eastern face of Har Habayit it went. Vein tam letzorech sareg. And I have no reason, or there is no reason given as to why they had the sareg. Kein tosefet malat hakdusha min hasareg lifnim. There's no additional kedusha from the sareg and inward. I mean, the kedusha that is determined by the walls of Har Habayit, the walls of the Azara. Those are all indications of a change in Kedusha. The Soreg doesn't indicate any change in Kedusha. Again, the Rash, Mishants, and others point out that they think it was a indication as to where non-Jews went, but that was a rabbinic injunction, not something that's dictated in the Torah. In the Torah, there's the area of Machaneh Yisrael, Machaneh Leviyah, and Machaneh Shekhinah. Machaneh Leviyah is Har Habayit, Machaneh Shekhinah is the Azara. But other than that, there's no differentiation in Kedusha and Har Habayit itself. So he says, I'm not exactly sure what the purpose of the Soreg is, and I don't know where it's located, but he seems to put it along the eastern side rather than around the entirety of the Azara. And then he says, Umatzati Katuv, so the Heter Tiltul B'Shabbat Naseh. It was actually put up to make it that you can carry on Har Habayit on Shabbat. Now, that seems strange, because Har Habayit itself has walls around it. Why do you need a Soreg to be put up if there are already walls around Har Habayit? And he says, because Mechitzot Har Habayit Naseh Tchila B'chol HaBinyanim Shebechoto Cho B'Avalei Hukaf U'Besof Patach. It's an area that was surrounded and then only built up afterwards. D'lo Mahani, that doesn't make it into a wall or a Mechitza that allows you to carry. B'chasha Naseh Binyanim, after they already put up the structures, which are, quote-unquote, living spaces, then Naseh Soreg Lakif. They put the Soreg to put it around Har Habayit L'Dira, to make it into a place that's mukaf l'dira. It's actually surrounded for living, liot patuach sofukaf, to make it into something that was developed and then has a wall around it, because that wall would then successfully create a wall or mechitza for Shabbat. It is an extremely difficult explanation. It seems very far-fetched that that was the reason. Again, the Balei HaTosafot, the Rosh Mishans, others indicate that it was to limit the area in which the non-Jews would go into the Mikdash. And then if you view the Eser Amot over here as being a description of the footprint of the Chel, that would tell you that it would be Eser Amot away from the walls of the Azara, you would have the Soreg. Whereas the Rosh here is searching for where's the Soreg placed, because he clearly views the Eser Amot similar to what we saw in the Rosh Mishans and the Rambam, that the Chel might have been a wall. And if it's 10 amot high, if that's the case, then you don't have any indication as to where the relative walls of the Soreg and the Chel are. And that's why it would present you a problem. But we're going to read it in a simpler manner, and the way that the majority of the Freshim do, which is that the Eser Amot is telling you the footprint of the Chel, which is the space between the Soreg and the Azara. That means the Soreg is within 10 amot of the walls of the Azara. The breaches are in the Soreg because it limits the access of non-Jews. And there are 12 stairs that are in the Chel. Rom mala chatziyama v'shalcha chatziyama. All the stairs are made with an increase in height of half an amah, and they extend forward. Their flat surface is also a half amah. So every stair, when you go onto it, it raises you a half amah, and you also have a half amah to step onto the stair itself. That's the depth of the stair, is that area of half amah. So now, if you have 12 stairs there, that means that you are elevating, you're going up 6 amot. You're climbing from the Chel until you reach the Azara, but it also means that the footprint of those stairs is also 6 amot, because you're going half amah. Now, if you think that the Chel is 10 amot, this is what bothers people as to why the Chel is 10 amot, because here you have stairs, that means 6 amot are stairs. So is the Chel 10 amot, or is it 6 amot? And so what they describe is that there are 4 amot of flat, and then 6 amot are taken up by the stairs that lead into the Azara. So you have stairs that are around the Azara, the walls of the Azara, that raise you, allow you to climb from the Chel, which has a surface of 4 amot flat after the Soreg, 6 amot upwards by going a 6 amot footprint, and then climbing 6 amot. And now the Mishnah tells us, Kol malot shayusham, roma alem chatzi amah, v'shalcha chatzi amah. All stairs in the Mikdash were comprised of an increase in height of a half amah and a footprint of a half amah. Chutz mishel ulam, with the exception of the ulam, which will be discussed later on in the Masechta, as to those stairs were uneven and as to what the structure of those stairs was. Kol haptachim shayusham, all the doorways or entranceways, including Har HaBayit, were kafama. They were 20 amot high, virachban 10 amot, and their width was 10 amot. So every doorway is 10 amot wide, 20 amot high, chutz mishel ulam, with the exception of the entranceway to the ulam, which is the antechamber before the heichal, before the kodesh and kodesh of kodeshim. There, they was 40 by 20. It was 40 high, 20 wide. It was double the size of any other doorways in the Mikdash. All the doorways or entranceways had doors to them. Chutz mishel ulam, with the exception of the ulam, for good reason. If your doorway is 10 amot wide by 20 amot high, you can build gates for that, or you can build doors to close there. When you have an entranceway that is 40 amot high, 20 amot wide, the expanse is so big, the doors would be so heavy and so large that it would be very difficult to do that. So instead, they hung a parochet over there as the closing of the ulam, rather than having a fixed doorway that was there. Kol ha-tachsharim shayusham ayu lahem shkufot. All the gateways that were there had a lintel on top, in that they were made out of mizuzot. They had uprights, and then they had a lintel that went across the top. The word shkof comes from the word mashkof. Chutz mishel tedi, with the exception of the gate of tedi. Tedi was the northern gate of Har HaBayit, as was described in the first parak. Again, the Rosh Mishnah there says it was the northern gate into the Ezrat Nashim, which is a very difficult explanation. Shayu sham shtei avanim motot zo agav zo. You had two stones that are sitting one on the other. Rosh Mishnah over here describes the two avanim as being two stones, one stacked on top of the other, and they basically carved a hole in the stones So the bottom stone has a U carved into it, and the upper stone has an N carved into it. And if you put them together, now you framed a doorway out of these two stones. That's the way that he describes it. On the other hand, the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot says that the two stones were actually a triangle that was on top. It was a pyramidic type of top to the doorway, which was made out of two stones. And many say that the word, even though the Rosh Mishnah says that it's a dalet tedi, that many say that the word actually was with the resh, tri. It comes from the word tri in Greek or Latin, which is triangle. And that's because the top was a triangle. It was pyramidic in nature. And that's what's being described here. Shartedi, it had that unique feature to it, that it did not have a flat lintel, but rather had a pyramidic top to it. That's what's being described here. Kol Asharim Shayusham Nishtanu Yod Shel Zahav. All the gateways of the Azara were upgraded to golden gates. Chutz Mishar Nikanor. With the exception of the eastern gate into the Ezrat Israel, which was known as the Shar Nikanor, because a miracle happened to them, that is described in the Mishnah Gemara in Yoma, that Nicanor went to Alexandria. You have to remember that the Jewish community in Alexandria was massive and was extremely wealthy, and they made a lot of the donations to the Mikdash, and they had a huge number of craftsmen there. That's described in the Mishnah and the Gemara in Megillah as well. And so he went to Alexandria Mitzrayim to procure these copper doors. And on the return trip, where he's bringing them by boat from Alexandria to the port of Akko, they hit a storm. And that storm was causing the boat to capsize. So they had to throw weight over to lighten the boat. They threw over one of the doors, and it still did not subside the storm. They were going to throw the second door overboard. And Nicanor basically wraps himself around it and says, if you throw that over, I'm going with it. So they had a little rachamim on him. They didn't just throw him over with the door. And they kept the door. The storm subsided, and he saved that one door. But he was so upset that he had lost the other door. When they get to the port of Akko, all of a sudden from under the boat starts to float up. The other door had caught on the bottom of the boat and had come in. They obviously brought the doors to the Mikdash, and they were installed in the Mikdash. They were made out of copper. Because of the miracle, they did not upgrade them to golden doors. They left those as copper doors because it was miraculous that they had brought those doors and they had survived the storm, even though it was thrown overboard. And therefore, they maintained them even after they upgraded all the other gateways to gold. Others say because the copper on these doors was such good copper that it shone like gold. And therefore, it was similar to gold. You didn't need to upgrade to gold because it looked like gold. The Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot over here says matziv is yarok. It was green, which means that it was oxidized copper, which was more green-like. It might have been, again, the gold that they were using also wasn't as golden as we would think today, but more of a greenish-tinted gold, and therefore it would have looked similar to that. In the Gemara in Psachim, I discussed, I'm not going to go into the details now, why they never mentioned the name of the individual who upgraded the doors to gold. They were actually donated by a Jew that was in Alexandria, who was a very senior person in the Roman government. He was one of the few Jews that ever got the appointment to a political position within the Roman government. His daughter ends up marrying Agrippas, who was part of the Herodian dynasty. So you know that he's well-placed, again, within the Roman Empire. The reason may be is because what's described in Josephus is that his son becomes so Romanized that he joins the army of Titus. And he is involved both in the massacre of the Jews in Alexandria, as well as the siege that is laid to Yerushalayim during the Churban HaBayit. And for that reason, his name may not be mentioned here, because his son is an active participant in the destruction of the Jewish community of Alexandria, as well as the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. That might be why they only mention when Nicanor put the gates in, but not who paid for the upgrade to the golden gates around the rest of the Azara. All walls that were there on Har HaBayit, the Azara, they were very high, with the exception of the eastern wall. The reason being, the Kohen goes on to Har HaZeitim, where they used to process the Parah Aduma. He stands on the top of Har HaZeitim. He needs to be able to see all the way into the doorway of the Eichal, B'shat hazayat adam. The time that he does the sprinkling of the dam of the parat duma, he has to do it mul opposite the petach omoed, but he has to be able to see into the petach omoed, because it has to be done nochach pnei omoed, opposite the entranceway or the opening to the omoed, which means the entrance to the echal. And in order to do that, they had to drop the eastern wall. Sent out again pictures on this. You can download them from the website and see them on www.sw.com. But the layout of the Mikdash is in a manner which that it climbs as you go from the Harabayit to the Ezrat Nashim to the Ezrat Yisrael to all the way up to the Echal. We already described here that there was a climb from the base of Harabayit, 6 amot to get to the Ezrat Nashim. Because you have a wall of Harabayit on the eastern side, that wall of the on the eastern side then has Harabayit inside of it. Then you get to the Soreg, which wasn't very high. It was all 10 tefachim high. And then you had stairs in the Chel that climbed 6 amot to get to the entranceway to the Ezrat Nashim. That entranceway to the Ezrat Nashim, it's a normal height of an opening, which is 20 amot high, with a wall or a lintel on top that extends even higher up than the 20 amot of the doorway. As you continue through the Ezrat Nashim, we're going to see in a little bit, you hit the Ezrat Yisrael. From the Ezrat Nashim to Ezrat Yisrael, there are 7.5 amot climb, and those 15 stairs of half amot each, which gets you 7.5 amot of extra height. Then, when you go from the Ezrat Yisrael to Ezrat Kohanim, you have another 2.5 amot of stair climb, which gets you higher. And then from the Ezrat Kohanim to the Heichal is another 6 amot of climbing. That was hinted to in the Mishnah before, that they had the uneven steps going up from the Ezrat Kohanim up to the Ulam. So if you take the total grade that has gone from the floor of Harabayit till you reach the entranceway to the Petach HaUlam and the Petach HaEichal, which are all on this flat surface, you're climbing 22 amot. There's 22 amot of climb. That's 6 amot from the Harabayit to Ezrat Nashim, 7.5 amot from the Ezrat Nashim to Ezrat Yisrael, which is 13.5. There's 2.5 from the Ezrat Yisrael to Ezrat Kohanim, which is 16 amot. Another 6 amot from the area where the Mizbeach sits up until the Ulam. It's 22 amot in total. So all the doorways are 20 amot high. That means starting at the entranceway to the Ezrat Nashim, all the way to the Petach Eichal, you can look through those doorways and see the entranceway to the Eichal. Because there's 22 amot of climb, the first 6 amot are before you get to Ezrat Nashim. So if you subtract 6 amot from that 22, that means that you have 16 amot of incline or increase in height from the Ezrat floor of the Ezrat Nashim till the floor of the Eichal. As long as all your doorways are 20 amot high, you could look through them and still see the entranceway to the Eichal. You'll see the lower part of it, but you could still see it. The problem is that if you have a doorway at Harabayit, on the walls of Harabayit, then you have a problem. Because even if it is 20 amot high, the doorway, you still can't see through the doorway to the Eichal, because the Eichal sits 22 amot higher than Harabayit. And if your doorway is only 20 amot high, you can't see through the doorway to the base of the Eichal. So what they did was they made the eastern wall or the eastern gateway into the Harabayit low, which means that the gateway itself was 20 amot high. It had a lintel on top, a small lintel on top. Let's say it's even amad, it's 21 amot high. Then that was it. The wall didn't climb higher than that. That means that the Kohen Gadol standing on Har HaZitim could look above the doorway to Harabayit and then through all the other doorways, through the Ezrat Nashim, the Ezrat Yisrael, and then the Petach Ulam, Petach Eichal, he can see through those doorways to the base of the entranceway to the Eichal. Because again, the climb is 22 amot, which is higher than the wall on the eastern side, because they limited the height of the wall on the eastern side to 20, 21 amot. And given that, he was able to see above that wall, and then through the rest of the doorways to the Petach Eichal, and that's how he accomplished that. Again, I have a diagram of that that shows you the eyesight or the eyeline sight of the Kohen Gadol when he's standing on Har HaZitim processing the Korban and he'll be able to see into the Petach HaEichal. Now, the truth is that this Mishnah follows Shitat Rabbi Meir, which is that the Kohen Gadol is the one who processes the Parah Adumah, That's not necessarily true, but rather any Kohen can process the Para Aduma. But this Mishnah mentions there are Kohen Gadol, because it's a Lima the Shita at Rabbi Meir. Others suggest that it's not Shita at Rabbi Meir, but rather generally the Kohen Gadol did it because it was an important event, but not that the Kohen Gadol had to do it. So even though the Mishnah mentions the Kohen Gadol, it's not exclusively the Kohen Gadol. Ezrat HaNashim. So now we start to deal with the floor layout, the footprint of the areas of the Azarot. The Ezrat HaNashim hayta orech 135, arochav 135. It was a squared area of 135 amot by 135 amot. B'dalet Yishkot hayu, b'dalet Mikzoteh. And it had four chambers in the four corners of the Beit HaMikdash, Shomem Mem Ama. Each one of those chambers was 40 by 40 amot. So they took up the majority of the space in the Mikdash of the 135 by 135 footprint of the Ezrat Nashim. 80 of that in both directions was taken up by the Lishkot. I mean, the Lishkot are in the corners, but 80 of that, so the space in between, the 55 amot between them, was basically a plus sign of 55 amot wide and then by 55 amot long, which was the area that was between those Lishkot. You should know that much of what is described here in the Bayit Sheni, as we're going to see in a second by Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, who lived through the Churban HaBayit, and he's describing here the Herodian upgrade to the Beit HaMikdash, or when we go today to see the Kotel and those areas, we see the remnants of what was the Herodian Beit HaMikdash, which was a upgraded, expanded Beit HaMikdash. There was the original one that was built by the Nevi'im when they came, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, who helped the Jews at the time of Nehemiah and Ezra rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. And then you had an expansion at the time of the Chashmonaim, and then a further expansion or remodeling that was done by Herod, which is described in the beginning of Baba Batra. And that is the Mikdash that the Gemara says about it. Anybody who didn't see a Mikdash like that never saw something beautiful in their lives, because it was a heavily invested and expanded view of the Mikdash. Now, much of what is done in the Mikdash has to be done pre the protocol that is laid out in Divrei Yamim and in the Navi, because it's a kol bichtav miyad Hashem, that everything has to be given. The blueprints are given from Hashem. They're very specific measurements by which things must be done, and they have to follow those measurements. This Bayit HaSheni, after it was renewed, follows some of the things that are described in Yechezkel about what we now call the Bayit HaShlishi, that's been described by Yechezkel, because they view this as maybe being a precursor or some upgrade that was bringing it closer to the Beit HaMikdash that's described in Yechezkel. So many of the measurements or dimensions over here match that which we see in Yechezkel, as we're going to see here and in the subsequent perek. Even though we weren't following necessarily the blueprint of Yechezkel, they were using the blueprint that was brought by the three Nevi'im, as the Gemara says, who came with the information to give us the layout of the Mizbeach, where the Mizbeach is located, and the fact that you're allowed to be Makriv Korbanot without Chomot, without walls that are there. So that information came with the Nevi'im. But many of the additional items, including this area of the Ezrat Nashim, where you have these Lishkot that are 40 by 40 on the sides, in Yechezkel it's described as being Lishkot that are 40 by 30. But it describes a very similar layout. And the Mishnah says, V'lo yu mikorot, that the Lishkot over there did not have roofs on them. And in the future, it will be similar. Shenemar, and you see here a quote from Yechezkel, again, describing this area. Took me to the outer chamber. The outer chamber being the Ezrat HaNashim. And they took me to the four corners of that chatzer, Ezrat Nashim. And there were new chatzerot in the corners of this chatzer. Chatzer b'miktsoa ha-chatzer. Ba'arbat miktsoot ha-chatzer, chatzerot kiturot. And in the four corners of the chatzer, there were other chatzerot kiturot. Ha-beri morech, u-shloshim rochav, mida achat, darbatam, mehuktsaot. Ve'en kiturot, ela she'ena mikurot. The word kiturot comes to teach you that they were not covered, they did not have roofs over them. Most of the explanations come from the word kitur, which means ashan, smoke. So kiturot are areas where if you have smoke, the smoke rises until the heavens, it's not stopped by the ceiling. That's why those are called keturot, because they don't have a roof over them to block the smoke from ascending from those areas. So you see here in Yechezkel that there is a large chatzer, which is the Ezrat Nashim, and it's surrounded by four smaller chatzerot. Now, chatzer is an area that's walled off without a roof on it. So that's what's been described. These chambers that are on the corners of the Ezrat Nashim, those are walled areas that have open roofs on top of them. What was the utility or the usage of these four chambers? Dromit Mizrachit. The southeastern one, Hiayta Lishkat HaNizirim, was the area where the Nizirim used to come together. Shesham HaNizirim Mivashlim Et Shalmehem Umigalchim Et Saran. That is where they come to bring their Shamei Nazir at the end or the termination of their Neder Nizirot. They would cut their hair, Umishachim Tachet Adod, and they place it under the cauldron that's cooking the shlamim. That's based on the psukim by the nazir, that the nazir has to bring three korbanot at the termination of his nazirut. He brings a olah, chatat, and shlamim. So the olah and the chatat are processed normally in the mikdash. The shlamim has special requirements, both in terms of what's gifted to the kohen, as well as the fact that it has to be cooked b'makom kadosh. It has to be cooked in a place that's kadosh, using the hair of the Nazir as part of the fuel for the cooking of the Shlamim. So in order to facilitate that, they created this Lishkat HaNizirim, which was on the southeastern corner of the Ezrat Nashim, where they had a cauldron, an area where you could cook the Shlamim using the hair of the Nizirim, as well as the fact that they probably had someone there who could cut the hair of the Nizirim in order to facilitate this going on. Mizrachit Svonit, the northeastern chamber, Yaita Lishkat Haitzim. That was the wood storage area. Shishama Konim Balei Mumim. Konim who could not serve in the Mikdash because they had some blemish in them that disqualified them from Avodah in the Mikdash. Matliim Et Haitzim. They used to check the wood for worms. They used to make sure that the wood was not rotten because that would be inappropriate to be placed on the Mizbeach. And so therefore they were checking the wood to make sure that it was good quality wood and it had not rotted in any way. And any piece of wood that they found a worm in it, they found that it was rotten, they would remove it from being used on the Mizbeach. Tzvonit Maravit, the northwestern chamber, Hiayta Lishkat Mitzoraim. That was the area of the Mitzoraim where they would gather to go to the mikveh on their eighth day, and then they would bring their Kurban Hasham, which required them to stand by Shar Nikanor and stick their hands and feet in, so the Kohen could place the dam of the Asham on their big toe and their thumbs and the sides of their ears. So that was the Lishkat Mitzoraim, which was the preparatory area for the Mitzoraim who were Tmeim to come and bring their Korbanot on the eighth day. Marvit Romit, the southwestern chamber. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Shechachti Mashaita Mishameshet. I forgot what its utility was. From here, the Gemara concludes that the author of Masechet Midot is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, because he's basically describing what's going on, and he says, I don't remember what this is, implying that he's writing everything that's found in Masechet Midot from memory. And again, he's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov HaRishon, that lives at the time of Rabbi Elazar HaGadol, and is a witness to the Churban HaBayit, and he's describing from memory what he remembers of the Har HaBayit and the Mikdash. Abba Shaul Omer, Shoshem Ayu Notnim, Yayin V'Shemen. It was the store area for the wine and the oil. He, Aitani Kreit, Lishkat Beit Shmanaya. And it was called the chamber of the oils, or the chamber of the fuel, because that's where they stored the oil and the wine that was used in the Mikdash. V'chalaka Haita Birosha, Barishona. It originally was flat, meaning that the areas of the Ezrat Nashim were completely flat all around. Later on, they added in with some stone platforms or structures on the side, the equivalent of what might be called bleachers around the outside, whether that was raised platforms that were up on pillars or whether it was actually graded, meaning stair-like structures that were on the side that acted like bleachers. It's described by the Gemara in Sukkah to deal with the issues of Simchat Beit HaShoeva. But they used to have men and women be there at the same time. And they tried to come up with a solution on how to separate the men and women so there wouldn't be any problems intermingling. And the final solution, which the Gemara describes over there, is that they had the men dancing in the middle in the Simchat Beit HaShoeva. And they had the women around the perimeter of the area outside of the men. And they did that by building this structure around the side of the Ezrat Nashim, which allowed the women either to be in bleachers, to be on a platform, or to have some sort of mechitza between the women on the outside and the men on the inside. This is one of the major sources, this in the Gemara and Sukkah, that describes this for our modern-day mechitza that exists in the shul for the separation between men and women. And many of the tshuvot, you can see, of Rav Moshe Feinstein, rely on the Mefarshei HaMishnah over here for the height and for the purpose of the mechitza, based on the description in the Gemara and Sukkah. And so here, the Rav Moshe Feinstein relies on the Pirshei Ravid of the Mishnah here in order to come up with his measurements, what he thinks the minimum height is, and so what he thinks the purpose of a mechitza is, which differs from many others, and brings him to a kula that most poskim do not hold of, as to the height or the minimum height of a mechitza. Shanashim ra'ot milamalan, vanashim milamaton, where the women are above looking down, and the men are down below. So they should not intermingle. And this again is described by the Gemara and Sukkah with regards to Simchat Beit HaShoeva. From the Ezrat Nashim, there are 15 stairs that climb to the Ezrat Yisrael. The Shira Malot, there are 15 Shira Malot that are found in Sefer Tehillim. So they had 15 stairs from the Ezrat Nashim until the Ezrat Yisrael. Shaleim Alevim Omrim Bashir, or Omdim Bashir. That's where Levim did their shir, did their singing every day that accompanied the Korbanot. They did it on these 15 Malot, or these 15 Shir Malot. Lo Ayu Trutot, they were not Trutot. Again, the Rosh over here says, Lashon Trutot, Eni Yodele Kavein, I don't know what it means. Ele Mukofot Kechatzi Goren Agula. Rather, they were rounded like a half circle or a semicircle of a goren, threshing floor. So the description here of the stairs, unlike those that were around, for instance, the chael into the Ezrat Nashim, which were square, rectangular in nature, because they went around the entire building, and the building is a rectangular building, so that was the shape. Over here, from the Ezrat Nashim to Ezrat Yisrael, they were semicircle in nature. It was a semicircle of stairs that went up. That's the way that the Rosh and the Rambam describe it. The Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot has a picture of semicircles in Od Vav. You can see a picture of that semicircle in the Perush Rosh down below. The Rosh Mishnayot adds in an additional piece of information, which makes it sound like it wasn't exactly that. He says, "Bigul achat heina v'achat heina." It was circular here and circular there. Chatzi aleveina, half a brick. Deishelo yelu yoter midai ad Ezrat Yisrael. So they shouldn't use too much space, or possibly, or he shouldn't go up too high towards the Ezrat Yisrael. He might be describing that which is shown in many pictures. It's like the Tiferet Yisrael is not just a sem, but it's a semicircle that squares out at the edge. It's the two ends, it becomes square-like on the two sides of it. And that might be what the Rosh Mishnayot is describing over here, this Chatzi Leveina, that it's not just circular, but it moves out at the edges to become squared out at the edges, rather than completely semicircular all the way around. It means that in the 15 stairs that climb to the Ezrat Yisrael, again, at half amah, means that in the footprint of the Ezrat Nashim, it took up 7.5 amot, and also caused a climb from Ezrat Nashim to Ezrat Yisrael of 7.5 amot. So that means that the platform of Ezrat Yisrael is 7.5 amot higher than that of the Ezrat Nashim. And then the mission says, based on that, the Lishkot Ayu Tachat Ezrat Yisrael. Since you now have this climb, 7.5 amot high, and to the right and to the left, you have these chambers that exist. But remember that you have an area between the chambers of about 55 amot, because the chambers themselves are 40 amot by 40 amot. Then you have about 55 amot between them. The staircase is in the middle. On the sides, you have empty space, which now faces a wall, because that wall is the height of the Ezrat Yisrael above the Ezrat Nashim. In the face of those walls, there were chambers that basically went underneath the Ezrat Yisrael. So similar to having a storage area under the staircase. Over here was to the side of the staircases. There were these chambers that faced the wall of what would be the height between the Ezrat Nashim and the Ezrat Yisrael. In those walls, there were lishkot chambers. So you talk about Ezrat Yisrael, that went under the Ezrat Yisrael. Uptuchot Ezrat Nashim. And their opening was into the Ezrat Nashim. That That's where the Levim stored their lyres, their harps, and their cymbals, b'chol klei shir, and all of their instruments were stored in that area. That's where they did the shira, right next to it, on the right and left of it, to the north and to the south of the staircase. You had a face of a wall that was the height of the Ezrat Yisrael vis-a-vis the Ezrat Nashim. So under the floor of the Ezrat Yisrael, they had entrance doors on both sides of this staircase that allowed you to store the instruments there. Ezrat Yisrael, then when you move up to Ezrat Yisrael, Hayeta Orech Me'ama V'Shloshim V'Chamesh, its length was 135 amot. Arocha V'Chatas Re'ama, with a depth or a width of 11 amot. So the width of the Ezrat Nashim is 135, and the Ezrat Yisrael and the remainder of the Mikdash from north to south was 135 amot. So the entirety of the Mikdash from Ezrat Nashim all the way to the back of the Chal had a width of 135 amot. That is the span from north to south of the Azara. The Rosh Mishans points out that in the Mikra, b'chol makom midah yeteira kriya orech. Whatever is the largest size is called the erech. V'amu'etet kriya rochav. And the smaller number is the rochav, even if it's the orech. So even though here, if you're looking at the Mikdash entering in from the eastern side, you would call the width that which goes from north to south, and the length would be that which goes from east to west. Nevertheless, the Mishnah doesn't describe it that way, because he says the Mishnah and the Psukim always pick the Orech as being the one that is longer or bigger. It doesn't matter whether it's your length from your perspective or width from your perspective. It all has to do with the relative numbers. And that's why over here it's calling the length of the Ezrat Yisrael 135, even though it's speaking about the north to south span, which is really the width of the Azara. So therefore it calls it 135, so it's 135 wide, and it goes in to the Ezrat Yisrael 11 amot. And then, after those 11 amot, you have the Ezrat Kohanim. V'chein Ezrat Kohanim, Aitzal Orech Kuf Amah V'lamed Hei, is 135 amot wide, Arochav Yudalef. Now it's saying width, but it really means lengthwise. It's another 11 amot entering in. So between the entranceway, the Sharnika Nur, there is now 22 amot. 11 of them are the Ezrat Yisrael. The next 11 amot are the Ezrat Kohanim. After that point, you hit the Mizbeach. Roshay Pis Pesim, Mavdil Ben Ezrat Yisrael, Ezrat Kohanim. And there were these Rosh Pis Pesim, which we also saw in the first parak, that separate between the Ezrat Yisrael and the Ezrat Kohanim, to indicate that you can't go past here if you're Yisrael. Unless you have a particular purpose, Yisrael is not allowed beyond the first 11 amot. Kohanim are allowed into that area. And then the Kohanim beyond that area need, again, a reason to go. Ben Ulam the Mizbeach. Between the Ulam and the Mizbeach, they need reason to be there. Otherwise, they need to stay in the area of the Ezrat HaKohanim. Now, the Rosh Pispisim were described in the first parak. The Rambam over there gives three different explanations as to what Pispisim are. He says, Aya davar katan mafsik. It's something that is small, that creates a division. Minukav nekavim kitanim. It has small holes in it. The female toya simotami kanim. Sometimes they make it out of reeds. The famimo sim eitzim. Sometimes they make it out of wood. Oh, the famimo sim bibinyan. Alo toa tsura meiz davar shiye. Sometimes they make it structurally out of the binyan in some way. So there's some sort of protrusion in the floor that indicates that you've made it from the Ezrat Yisrael, that's the end, and now you're into the Ezrat Kohanim. That's the way it's described by the Tanna Kamma. Others say that the word here is from Pisifas, which is mosaic in Hebrew, and that they laid mosaic over there to indicate that there was a division between the Ezrat Yisrael and the Ezrat Kohanim. But Blessed Ben Yaakov Omer, Blessed Ben Yaakov disagrees and says that's not how they divide it, but Mala Haita Gvoama. There was a step from the Ezrat Yisrael to Ezrat Kohanim, which was an Amah high, but Duchan notan aleha, and the Duchan, which is a reference to the place where the Kohanim stood to give their Birkat Kohanim, was on top of that step. Ubash lo shmalot shechatzi chatzi Amah. And that Duchan had on it three stairs, and now it has the typical or the standard height of a stair in the Mikdash, which is a half Amah up and a half an Amah of footprint. Nimseit Ezrat Kohanim, Gvoam Ezrat Yisrael, Shtei Amot Umechsa. That makes it the Ezrat Kohanim now is 2.5 Amot above the floor of the Ezrat Yisrael, because you had a step of an Amah. And then you have the Duchen, which is another three steps of half Amah, or 1.5 Amot. So it's a sum total of 2.5 Amot there. The Rosh Mishnah says that's why the Duchen is there, because it's appropriate that the Levi'im do their Shira in the entranceway to the Ezrat Israel, which is their area, and that's where they do their Shira, and the Kohanim do their Brocha in the area that's the entranceway to their Azara, which is the Ezrat Kohanim. So they have a Duchen there where the Kohanim do their Brocha, and these 15 stairs and go from the Ezrat Nashim to the Ezrat Israel. That's where the Levi'im do their Shir, because that's the entranceway to their quote-unquote area. Kol Azara, Aita Orech, 187, Arochav, 135. You can see here that the Mishnah switched what was the length and what was the width here, because now it's describing the entirety of the Ezrat Israel, or the Azara. It's 187 long, that's east to west, and north to south, it's 135. We called that the Orech before, but it's really the Rochav. It's north to south, is 135. That will be later on. And the Mishnah will describe to us the exact makeup of the 187 and the 135, how that spanned inside the Azara. There were 13 bowings that they did there. Abayosi ben Chanomer Keneged Yud Gimel Sharim. That is Keneged, the 13 entranceways to the Azara. So he disagrees with what we saw before. The Chachamim believed that the 13 Ishtachavayot had to do with the Pirtzot that were in the Soreg. He believes that it has to do with the fact that there were 13 gateways into the Azara. Now that disagrees, as we saw already in the Gemara in Tamid, with the beginning of our Masechta that said that there were 5 She'arim, Levi'im, guarded going into the Azara. The Gemara there gave 2 explanations. Either there were 5, or there really were 7, but 2 of them didn't need guarding because they were between the 2 outer gateways, one to the east, one to the west. So the one in the middle didn't need guarding. And so there were only 5 guards, even though there were 7 shearim. We also found another opinion that said that there were 8, because it's 13 total of shearim, 5 on Har HaBayit, that left you with 8. So we have different opinions as to how many gateways there were into the Azara, whether it was 5, 7, 8, or 13. This Mishnah is following the opinion of Abbi Yossi ben Hanan that there were 13 she'arim, which we're about to describe. Some of the difference might be explained by upgrades to the Mikdash over time, which might have added gateways to the Mikdash. Others might be disagreements as to the utility or function of certain areas where they were chambers and whether they were considered to be she'arim or not considered to be she'arim. Or there might be actually a machloki between them as to the number of she'arim. So now, dromiim smuchim lemarav, the ones on the southern side that are closer to the western end, Shar HaElyon, be the upper one, because it was probably the gateway that was the highest in elevation in its entranceway to the Azara, because it was so far west. Shar HaDelek, which is the area where they brought the fuel or the wood into the Mikdash to bring it to the Mizbech. Shar HaBechorot, which is the entranceway for the Bechorot, because there they brought the Bechorot in, that needed to be shechted on the southern side. They don't require northern side because they're not Kodshei Kodoshim. Shara Mayim, the gateway of the Mayim. Balamani Krashmo Shara Mayim. Why is that called the Shara Mayim, the fourth one on the southern side as you move towards the east? Shabom Achnisim Slochet Shal Mayim Shal Nisuch Bechag. Because that was the entrance way where they brought the Nisuch HaMayim in on Sukkot. When they brought it up from the Shiloach, they entered through that gateway into the Azara. Because that's where the waters are going to start to pour out in the future. What he's referencing to is the pasuk in Yechezkel that describes the waters that are exiting from the Mikdash that start out as a trickle and then become a bigger and bigger river as they leave the Mikdash. That starts from a gateway at the Azara. And that's why they call it the Charamayim, because it's a reference to that future nivuah from which the shar, from that gateway, waters will exit and flow out from underneath the threshold of the doorway. Ulamatan bitzafon, opposite them, and the northern side, smuchim lemarav, starting from the western side, on the northern side, shar yechonya, which the Mishnah will describe in a second what that is, shar hakorban, the shar with which they brought korbanot, shar anashim, is an entranceway for women to come to do smicha on their korbanot, at least according to the one who said that women can do smicha on their korbanot. According to the one who said that they can't, it was just an area where they could come see their korbanot being brought. They didn't do smicha there. Shar HaShir, the entranceway to the shir, where the Levi'im brought their instruments into the Azara, if you believe that the Duchan and the beginning of Azarat Kohanim was used by the Levi'im for their shir as well. Or the Tiferet Yisrael says that it's synonymous with the Shar Beit HaMoked that we saw in the first parak. V'lama nikra shmo Shar Yechonya. Why was the entranceway called the Shar Yechonya? Shbo yatsa Yechonya b'galuto. They have a Mesorah that when Yechonya went into Galut after the first Beit HaMikdash, he exited from this. He went to the Mikdash, bowed down, and exited through this gateway. It's a little bit anachronism because that's from Bayit Rishon, and over here we're talking about a description of Bayit Sheni. So how would you have a gateway that was connected to something that happened in Bayit Rishon? But it might have been a Mesorah that he left from the gateway that was the most northwestern on the Mikdash, and therefore they named the gateway that was the most northwest to memorialize it, not because he actually physically left through that gateway, because it didn't exist, maybe in Bayit Rishon, and the first Bayit was already destroyed, obviously. Shememizrach, the eastern gateway into the Azara, Shar Nikanor, which we discussed earlier. Ubet Pishpashim Ayulo, it had two smaller entranceways, Echad Mimino, one to the right, Echad Mismalo, and one to the left. Ushnaim Bimarav. And then you have two on the western side, Loyalem Shem. They didn't have any name to them, that's likely because they probably didn't have much utility. People did not enter from the western side, that means you're behind the Kodesh HaKodeshim. That's not the way you entered into the Mikdash. Even though, as the Rosh Mishnah points out, the Ezrat Yisrael, where Yisraelim were allowed, was in the Ezrat Yisrael. And then along the southern side, all the way to behind the Kodesh HaKodeshim, that was also, according to him, considered to be Ezrat Yisrael, and Yisraelim could stand in those areas. And then on the western side, Yisraelim could walk freely without any problem. There were entrances from that side. But if people didn't enter there because you're entering from the back door instead of entering from the front of the Mikdash, which didn't make so much sense if you're trying to come and bow down and enter facing the Eichal, to enter from the back. So those two doors probably were there, gates were there, but they didn't have a lot of utility. So that gives you 13. You have four on each side of the Azara, north and south. That's 8. Plus you have Shar Nikanor, which is 9. It has two smaller doorways to the right and left, which makes 11. And then you have the two on the western side, which give you the 13 gateways to the Azara. All right, with that we complete the second parak, Hadranalach Harabait. Now, the third parak begins with the description of the Mizbeach. This is something that should be familiar to us from the Gemara in Zvachim, the Gemara in Menachot, which described how they constructed the Mizbeach and the nature of the frame of the Mizbeach. A Mizbeach haya shloshim u'shtayim al shloshim u'shtayim. The base of the Mizbeach was 32 by 32. Once again, I sent out pictures that show you what this was. Alama. So it was a block that was 32 by 32 and an ama high. That's the foundation, the yisod ha-Mizbeach. Alama v'kenas ama. It goes up an ama and then goes in an ama. Ze ha-yisod. That's the foundation of the Mizbeach. Nimseitz shloshim ha-shloshim. Ala chamesh. So then you have, after that, an area that is 30 by 30, Allah Chamesh. It goes up 5 amot. Vikinei Sama. Once it climbs from Amah, it goes in an Amah. Zeh Sovev. That's the Sovev that goes around the Mizbeach, where you can walk around the Mizbeach. So that's 6 amot off the floor of the Azara. You have the Sovev, where Kohanim can go around and do Avoda on that area. Nimsa Kavchet al Kavchet. Then you have a block now that is 28 by 28 that actually rises an additional 3 amot. Makoma kranot. Then the kranot themselves, amamizeh v'amamizeh, they're cubic ama. So they take up an ama on each corner on this block of 28 by 28. Therefore left inside of the area of the kranot is kavav al kavav, 26 al 26. Makom ilucha kolei hakohanim, amamizeh v'amamizeh. Then there's an amah inside of the kranot that is the makom iluch, ragli ha-kohanim. There is an amah between the kranot, but you can't go all the way around because you'll bump into the kranot. So anywhere besides the corners, you'll have 2 amot of space. But when you get to the corners, you can't go. So there's a strip around there of an amah that's called makom ragli ha-kohanim. Inside of that is the maracha. So now what you have is here a base that is 32 by 32, an amah high, an amah in. That leaves you a square area of 30 by 30. The next block is 30 by 30. 5 amot high. That gets you to the sovei, 6 amot. The next area then, if you go in an amah for the sovei, that leaves you an area of 28 by 28, 3 amot high. That gets you to 9 amot of the mizbeach, and leaves you a square area of 26 by 26 internally, because in the corners of the top there, they have the karnot, and the karnot are a cubic amah. So they take up an amah of that platform of 28 by 28. That leaves you then an area internally to that of 26 by 26. They had an area around the perimeter of an amah where the Kohanim could walk around to deal with the pyre and work on the Mizbeach. So that nimsa kapdalet al kapdalet makom ha-meracha. That leaves the area of the pyre to be 24 by 24 amot. So that is the area of the pyre on top of the Mizbeach. And now the mission is going to describe how they got to that. The Mikdash was not always that way, because Rabbi Yossi, Mitzkila lo haya elo kafchet al kafchet. Originally, the size of the Mizbeach, I mean the Mizbeach of Shlomo HaMelech, was 28 amot by 28 amot. I mean, it started, instead of 32 by 32, it started out as 28 by 28. Kones vole b'midazo, it climbs, and it goes inward the same way, ama up, ama in, 5 amot up, 1 ama in, 3 amot up, and then the karnot. Achnim say makom haracha, if you do the same calculation, then makom haracha is 20 by 20. Ukshalo b'nei agola, usifolav 4 amot min hatzafon, v'davad amot min hamarav. When the Bnei Noah came up, they added on to the footprint of the Mizbeach 4 amot to the north side and 4 amot to the western side, kamin gemeh, like a gemeh, which is looks like a L-shaped or a backwards L-shaped, shenemar. And now again, they based on a pasuk out of Yechezkel. You can see that in the building of Bayit Sheni, they relied partially on the description in Yechezkel and not just what they had from Bayit Rishon. And not just what they have by the three Nevi'im that ascended with them in the Gemara Zvachim, that came with them in a Gula, Echad Sheilem HaMizbeach, one of which told them where the Mizbeach was, Echad Sheilem HaMakom Mizbeach, one of them told them where the Mizbeach was located, Echad Sheilem Shemekarim HaPishen Bayit, you can put on Korbanot on Mizbeach, even though the Bayit doesn't exist. So there is a Nevu'ah, or a description of the Nevi'im, according to the Gemara, as to how the Mizbeach was built, or the structure of the Mizbeach. So they weren't just making this up. They weren't just relying on the Pesukim in Chezkel, but they had a Navi guiding them. And that tells you the prominence as well as the importance of the Mizbeach and the placement of the Mizbeach, where it's located, as well as to what the shape of the Mizbeach is. And the Pesuk in Chezkel says, V'Ariel Yudbet Orech B'Shtemesrei Rochab. The Ariel, which is a reference to the Mizbeach, is 12 by 12. Rabua, a squared area. From here it sounds like it's 12 by 12, the area of the Maracha. Shomer al-arbat riva'av. In its four directions, the Pesuk in Yechezkel says, Lamei shemina emtsa u'modeid. It's telling you from the center, in four directions, it is 12 amot in each direction. Which means that, modeid yudbet amalachol ruach. You go 12 in every direction. That means that the span of the Maracha is 24 by 24, which is what's being described here as the Mizbeach that they had during Bayit Sheni, which expanded the Mizbeach 4 amot on each side. The reason they did that is because they wanted to cover the area of the Shittim. In Bayit Rishon, they used to do the wine libations on the top of the Mizbeach. It would come down, the piping in the Mizbeach, go onto the floor of the Azara, and then go into the Shittim, which was on the southwestern side of the Mizbeach. In Bayit Sheni, they darshaned that not only does the Achilat HaMizbeach have to be done in the Mizbeach, Shtiat, the drink of the Mizbeach, also has to be done in the Mizbeach. So in order to facilitate all that being done inside the Mizbeach, then they had to pour the wine libations on the Mizbeach and have it drop down into the Shittim. In order to have the Mizbeach cover the Shittim, they had to extend it 4 amot to the south, to 4 amot to the west, and that expansion of 4 amot and 4 amot on that side covered the Shittim and allowed it to go internally. By Rishon, they didn't do it because the Pasuk there says it has to be a Mizbeach Adama. And so they felt that Mizbeach Adama mean that it had to be filled solidly on the inside. Never, you can't have any hollow space on the inside. In Bayit Sheni, they just said that Mizbeach Adama is a description that it's a binyan. It's a structure that's built into the ground. But it's not necessarily that it has to be completely filled on the inside with Adama. Therefore, you could have these hollow pipings that went down that took the wine libations through the Mizbeach down into the Shittim. And that difference in interpretation allowed them to expand the Mizbeach in Bayit Sheni to cover the area of the Shittim. Rav Yoel Binun, in describing this or discussing this, actually has an interesting shita by which he tries to explain why it is that they changed that. He says that if you take a maracha that's 20 by 20 and it's diamond shaped, and he describes why they did it in that manner, because when they first come back, there is no Bayit, there's no Beit HaMikdash, they're putting up a Mizbeach without any walls, without any Mikdash there. And therefore, there's nothing that actually anchors you to Ruchot Olam. And based on that, he thinks that all Mizbechot that were built and based on what they found in the Mizbech that they consider to be the Mizbech of Yoshua near Har Gerizim and Har Eival, they found a similar thing, which is that instead of it being flat side or the face being in the directions of Ruchot Olam, which is that the Mizbech that we know of is when it's south, means facing the south of the world, east, west, north are all the same. It's structured in a way that it's squared out to the directions of the world. But if you don't have a bayit in front of you, then the simplest way and the most logical way to build a Mizbech is to have the corners go to Ruchot Olam. That's what you find by the Mizbech of Yoshua. And that's what he claims they did when they first came up from the Golah. They put up a Mizbech that was a diamond shape. That means that the corners faced north, south, east, and west. Then when they squared it out after the Echal is in front of you, once you have Echal, then you can be Mifnei Hashem with the flat side of the Mizbech. You square out an area around a 20 by 20 diamond, then you can end up with a maracha that is 28 by 28. That's how he explains why the Mizbeach of Bnei HaGolah, when they rebuilt it after they built the Mikdash, was expanded and had a larger span area than the original one that was placed there by the maracha shel Shlomo HaMelech and the maracha of those that were Oleh in a Golah originally when the Mikdash was not built. And that's how he describes the reason or the need for the expansion to be done, which is to create those triangles. That's the Mingemeh. It's at the corners in order to expand it over the diamond area of the Mizbeach. Now the Mishnah continues and says, "B'chuta sikra chogro be'emtza," there was a red line that went around the middle of the Mizbeach, "l'avdil ben adamim ha'elyonim l'adamim ha'tachtonim," to separate between the blood above the chuta sikra and the blood below the chuta sikra, meaning that the korbanei olatov and the korbanot chatat behema had to be done on the upper half of the mizbeach, and so that's above the chuta sikra. Everything else, all the other korbanot are done below the chuta sikra. The chuta sikra was that dividing line, 5 amot up, which is 1 amah below the sovev of the mizbeach, and you sold the sod mizbeach malech apnei kol tzafon v'apnei kol marav. The Sod Mizbeach was along the entire northern face of the Mizbeach, the entire western face of the Mizbeach. And then on the southern side and the eastern side, it eats up an amah. Here you have a machloket as to what it looked like. I sent you again pictures that you can see it. The Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot, you can see the pictures in the back here of the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot, where he gives, interestingly enough, a description of Mizbeach that has Yisod all the way around it, with the exception of the southeastern corner. It's picture Tet in the Rambam's pictures in the Perush Mishnayot. And he says that only in the southeastern corner itself was there no Yisod. Other than that, there was a Yisod around the entire Mizbeach. The Tiferet Yisrael describes it simply as being that on the northern and western sides they had a Yisod, and then that Yisod continued straight out an amah in each direction. So that's why it says on the east and the southern side, it had an amah extending into it, because it just continued the straight lines that were on the north and western side. And Rashi in Zvachim adds that it actually turned the corner, that it actually turned onto the eastern side and turned onto the southern side 1 amah. And you can see something similar here in the Perush HaRosh, in the picture down below, that looks similar to what Rashi did in Zvachim, which is that in each side it turns the corner and goes in an amah on that direction. And that's what it means here, that there was an extra amah that was on each side there. So those are three different opinions as to what it means here. But what is clear from all the opinions is that on the southeastern side there was no Yisod. And how far that went on the southeastern side is the machloket, that it didn't have a Yisod. And that's why all the damim are placed on the corners that do not include the southeastern corner. That's the one corner where no matnot dam were done below the chuta sikra, because there's no yisod over there. All the matnot dam were done along the southern and western side. Even in the corners of the southwestern and the northeastern side, that still had a yisod, and therefore all the matnot dam are then done there, including the shtayim shen arba that are done in those two corners. And that's the description of the Yisod HaMizbeach. As far as the description of the Mizbeach, the Gemara in Zvachim spends time on it and tells us that all Amot that were in the Mikdash had a 6 Tvachim Amah, with the exception of certain things that had a 5 Tefach Amah, including the Mizbeach HaZahav, and parts of the Mizbeach HaChitzon. And based on that, they come up with the height of the Mizbeach being 58 Tvachim. That is because the Ama, the Sod, climbed up 5 Tfachim. Then it climbs again 5 Amot, which is the next level up. But that's all of Amot of 6 Tfachim. So that's a total of 30 plus the 5 is 35 Tfachim. Then you have the 3 Amot from the Sovev to the Keren. And those are made up of 6 Tfachim Amot. So that's another 18. So you have 30 plus 18 plus 5 is 53 Tfachim. And then the last Amav, the Keren, was only 5 Tfachim high. And then the top of the Keren was either 5 in or 6 in. And therefore, the height of the Mizbeach was 58 Tfachim. The Chuta Sikra said at the 29 Tfachim location along those 58 Tfachim. Again, I sent you a picture. A total of 58 Tfachim. The Rambam also has reported it over here. That also has impact on the 32 by 32 Amot that we spoke about because the Knisa of the Sovev and the Knisa of the Yisod were also only 5 Tfachim, which means that when you're measuring the 32 Amot by 32 Amot, it's really 32 by 32 Amot minus 2 Tfachim, because 2 of the Amot were 5 Tefach Amot and not 6 Tefach Amot, not only in the height, but also in the footprint of the Mizbeach. And therefore, the real measurement is 32 Amot by 32 Amot minus 2 Tfachim, which then would go up through the structure. But then once you pass through the Yisod and the Yisovev already, then you've incorporated those 5 Tfachim Amot. So that means at the top, the Maracha, that's 24 by 24, is actually 24 by 24 Amot. We won't get into that now. We'll discuss that later when we discuss the footprint of the Azara. And we're going to stop here at the bottom of Lamed Hey Amud Bet at the completion of the first Mishnah of the third Perek.